There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the deal we got? I mean, the deal we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 at Midday Mobile on this Monday. A live local talk over the next couple of hours. So we got a lot to talk about, a lot to talk about with you. And I want to hear from you as well. Phone line, text line, 343-0106, 343-0106. Updated numbers right now for Alabama. 167 coronavirus virus cases in Alabama. Also, just coming out minutes ago, Governor Kay Ivey has now issued a third supplemental state of emergency. I guess you add to the, I don't know my, I guess you have one state of emergency, and as you add more things, it becomes supplemental. Looking at it right here, it says, bum, 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 bum. And now this will all be in legalese with the whereas. It says, you know, whereas I, on March 13th, 2020, I declared, this is from Governor Ivey, whereas on March 13th, 2020, I declared the existence of a state public health emergency based on the appearance of the 2019 novel coronavirus known as COVID-19 in the state of Alabama. It goes down through the line out. Then it says here, for the additional information for the state of emergency, number one, postponement of certain state tax obligations. It says, I find that in light of the rapidly evolving public health guidance concerning social distancing and sanitation practices, the citizens of Alabama have had insufficient time to safely comply with tax obligations referenced above or referenced below. I further find that the rapidly evolving public health guidance caused and continues to cause economic hardship, and that relief from certain state tax obligations is necessary to secure the economic safety and protection of the civilian population. To that end, all right, let's get to the meat of this. It says, number one, it says, I hereby delegate to the Commission of Revenue the authority to postpone the April 15th, 2020 due date for the payment of the following state taxes until July 15th, 2020 for any person that is defined in Alabama code. Number one, individual income tax. Number two, corporate income tax. Number three, financial institutions excise tax. Number four, business privilege tax. Okay, so those pretty much cover most people and anything that they're doing there. So once again, individual tax, corporate income tax, financial institutions excise tax, and business privilege tax. They have now been postponed to July 15th. So July 15th, which is real close to what the runoff is, right? The runoff, I think, is July 14th that was moved. So now state tax has been moved from obviously April 15th and moved on to July 15th. So just a heads up there from the governor's office. We're getting that in as we get on the air today with today's show. All right, coming up in just a second, we'll talk about it in a we'll talk about the City of Mobile's response here to coronavirus, and we'll talk to George Talbot with City of Mobile. He'll join us here in just about 6 minutes. Also coming up, Todd Stacey from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll talk to him, and an interview from earlier this morning with State Superintendent of Schools, Eric Mackey. What about schools? What about when do they go back to school? What happens then? How do you move kids from, not even the seniors, we get into a discussion of that, but how do you move kids from the 6th grade to the 7th grade, 7th grade to the 8th grade, whatever it is, if they don't finish out the school year? We'll have that interview coming up a little bit after 1 o'clock today on Midday Mobile. So that's on the way, all on the slate, and of course, I want to hear from you at 343-0106. Also, we'll get the best coronavirus parody song I've heard yet. And now there's a bunch of songs have been popping up on social media surrounding coronavirus. It's what people do This is, in my opinion, maybe I'm a child of the 80s, maybe it's a age thing, but this is what I think is the best parody song yet. We'll get to that coming up in just a little bit, but stay tuned. This hour, we'll get the song, because you got to hear the song. I don't think we have time. Somebody's playing it now. We don't have time to... Oh, heck, maybe we could... We'll get it played this hour. We'll get it played this hour. Sometime before 1 o'clock. Sometime... Maybe we'll do it when we come out of the next commercial break. We'll play this. It is the parody song that I think is best yet. All right, and also, I want to say a big thank you to Stephen Haywood with the shrimp basket on Old Shell. He stopped by with a big bag of shrimp basket goodness. They're doing takeaways still at the location there on Old Shell, the Mobile location's shrimp basket. You can call ahead, get your order, and you'll pull up, grab your great... We're enjoying right now blackened shrimp and Kaneka sausage po' boys from the shrimp basket. Stephen, thank you, man. I appreciate that. And Stephen's just like so many of the businesses here in town, all of us in small business, working together, trying to keep this thing going and waiting to see what the response will be from Washington as they still battle it out up there of what the Democrats want in. You heard, of course, Mike Gallagher show just a second ago. There's parts of the bill, at least proposed by Democrats, that would deal with wind and solar tax credits. I mean, I have no problem getting into a discussion about wind and solar tax credits, but they're trying to work that into a relief bill for small business and medium-sized business in this country. Really? Well, as the people out here sit and fret, and they make that sausage in Washington. All right, coming right back. Communications Director for the City of Mobile, George Talbot, joins us right here on Midday Mobile. Stay close.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 12:15, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Once again, big thank you, Stephen, over at the Shrimp Basket. Much appreciated. As we are continue to do the radio thing here throughout this process, and continue to support all local businesses out there. And y'all just keep us in the loop, too. Information about your small business will pass along. And tomorrow, the first of our new series here with my friend Cam Marston. It is a special What's Working Coronavirus edition, and it's tomorrow at 1 and Thursday at 1. And we'll probably do this every week, a one-hour show where Cam is interviewing those people that have the information that small business folks need. Whether it's navigating the SBA loan process, it's questions about employees and questions about marketing, all these things that small businesses are facing right here at home, Mobile and Baldwin counties. Y'all got to listen tomorrow at 1 and again on Thursday at 1. Plus, we'll put it up with our 44, 45 hours a week of podcast. It'll go up as well. But yeah, tomorrow at 1, the inaugural, and we'll talk more about that coming up in just a little bit. Also, check in with George Talbot from the City of Mobile. But first, I mentioned it, and I tell you what, because I don't want to run out of time at the end of the hour, be in one of those situations where I do and then I don't live up to what I promised. So, okay, we're going to do what I think is the best coronavirus parody song yet. And I know those who are ready to just be upset by anything might get upset, but this is, I don't think making fun. I think it's good to have, you know, somebody who has a creative outlet here and in the right tone does a parody song. I've seen a whole bunch of them. This is my favorite. Maybe it's because I'm a child of the 80s, was a fan of the Police, or just like the writing that went into this. This comes from the folks Truth Smacked over there on Twitter. They put this up today, and here it is. So this is I Don't Want COVID-19, which sounds a whole lot like the Police's Don't Stand So Close to Me.
Closed, you see, she wanted so badly to keep the virus from getting free. It's inside you, there's no use, no symptoms to display. Crashed markets, stores closed now. People are panicking.
Up the song at the end of the hour, for sure, the 1 o'clock hour. A little taste, maybe I shouldn't say it that way, of I Don't Want COVID-19, of course, as the police originally sang it, Don't Stand So Close to Me. All the people saying, why not My Corona? Come on, y'all, you're not any more cynical than that. That one's too easy. That's too easy. Show some creativity, that one that was just rolled out. All right, let's check in with Communications Director with the City of Mobile, George Talbot, and a lot to talk with George about. Thanks for hopping on.
Good to be with you, and I was thinking of some other songs. I Drink Alone by George Thorogood, Dancing With Myself by Billy Idol. There are a lot of ways you could go with it.
The social distancing jukebox playlist. We'll have to start working on that on Twitter. Just a little bit of vacation from thinking about what is a serious subject and dealing with coronavirus. Let's talk about the city right now. I know the mayor talked about the two facilities set up, Lad Peebles and Out at the Grounds, for testing. And now do we have a date that we're going to get those kits in?
Yeah, we're told by the lab that's manufacturing that they believe they can have them ready by April 1. We're hoping it can be sooner than that, but that's the date that we think we'll be able to hit it sooner than that. Hopefully, we're up and going by this time next week.
So how is that going to work? Is it do you call ahead like I've been hearing with other facilities, or do you just show up?
That's right. That's if you look at what they were doing in Birmingham, and the Church of the Highlands really took the lead on this and did a great job getting out there and ended up conducting more than 1,000 tests. I think they're still tallying that up. But they just sort of really figured it out as they went. And so we sent a team up there on Saturday to get some lessons learned, get some recommendations, and got some great feedback that we'll implement as we get this up and going in Mobile.
Okay, so it's going to be kind of just a parallel to what they did up there, except in the case of Church of the Highlands, that's private. This is public, right?
I mean, yeah, we'll end up the city. We're not a public health agency, and so. The mayor's actually out this morning meeting with leadership out at USA Hospital, and we'll need to, the hospitals have to be involved in this, and they've got the healthcare professionals, and so exactly what this looks like, we have to kind of see. This is all new territory for everybody, but bottom line is that we're not waiting around on somebody else. We're proactively getting out there and making this happen.
What happened yesterday, give us a Cliff Notes, Wikipedia version of what happened yesterday with the Big Ten mayors meeting. I know they had a conference call with Senator Jones.
Correct. And they've been staying in touch, the mayors, throughout this process, talking regularly, both by conference call and by text. They've got a tech group going and just sharing ideas. Here's some things we've done. Here's some things that have worked, things that haven't worked. That's been a great resource. And so Senator Jones actually led that call, and he kind of provided an update of the federal legislation, which is, you know, kind of tied up in partisan politics, unfortunately. But he did express optimism that they would get the Senate would get a bill out, and the number that is being tossed around is in the $2 trillion range. So Hopefully today they'll be able to break that log jam and get a bill out. And so he kind of provided an update on that. Then the mayors kind of went around and talked about different challenges they're facing, which I think it's pretty consistent wherever you are in Alabama, around the country. It's getting the test kits and then the protective gear that you need to administer the test. So there's a nationwide shortage on that. And the federal government is up and rolling, but again, wanting to be proactive, I know Mayor Stimson's view was, I'm not going to wait on somebody else. I'm going to jump in here and see if I can find these resources and get them into our community. And the good news is, I think we've made a lot of progress on that front.
Yeah, you're not the first to have said this, but I want people to hear what you're saying as well. It's the test kits, it's the PPE, the personal protection equipment, and I guess the actual testing. So it's not, we all just think about it, oh, it's the swab or something like that, but it's more than just the swabbing that's needed.
That's correct. You've got to make sure that, you know, in my my layman's terms, I'm not a doctor, obviously, but that you're properly administering it and that you're properly preserving the samples. And you know what I mean, that everything is being tracked properly. And so there's a whole kind of process behind it, and we're working all that out. They've been very generous, that is the Church of the Highlands and some of the lab professionals up there, with sharing us some suggestions and how to organize it, and we're going to definitely use that as we get our test sites up and going.
Yeah, they have, of course, they're in Jefferson County, have the most confirmed cases of any county in Alabama. We look at Mobile County with two cases, George. I know that most likely, I don't know, but most likely more cases will come up when the testing is available. But people look at this right now, and I know you're hearing about it, and they say, look at all the shutdown. Look at what this is doing to small businesses in our city. And right now we only have two confirmed cases.
It is, first and foremost, a public health crisis. And it is a crisis. It's a threat to the health and well-being of the city. But it is also an economic crisis. And as this plays out over the next few weeks and maybe even months, there are some real serious economic impact that this is having. And you're seeing that first wave kind of in the hospitality industry and restaurants. But as it lingers and as it continues, that's an area that we have to address as well. Again, first priority is stopping the spread and dealing with the health crisis, but we also have to think about the economic ramifications of this, which are very serious.
Yeah, and that, of course, goes from the businesses in the city, the people, to government. And I know there was a little bit of the discussion of what may be done at a federal level for small business, but also for municipalities. Have you heard whether there will be any kind of funding coming from the Fed? Because obviously the tax revenue is going to be decreased. I don't know how much, but obviously it's going to be decreased.
Sure. So we're already kind of looking at those costs and the projections in terms of the revenue. We're, as everybody knows, we're heavily dependent on sales tax. Obviously sales are down. We can kind of project forward what the trends may be looking like. Still kind of early in this, but yes, is the answer. There'll be some federal money, but we're not going to wait around on a check from Uncle Sam to do something we need to do to protect the citizens. So we're getting out there, you know, first of all, keeping the wheels of government turning, but also making sure that we're doing everything we can to be supportive of our healthcare community and helping them stop the spread.
Yeah, I just worry for the longer term, with budgets built on projections on revenue coming in through sales tax, those have been, I would imagine, upended at this point.
Yes, absolutely. And that's a very real consequence that cities all over Alabama and all the mayors are staying well connected with that. But right now, our focus internally has been making sure that all the city services are functioning for the citizens, and you know, you just can't say enough about the great workers, particularly our first responders, police and fire, who are out there every day, and that extends to our public works guys, who are working their tails off like never before. So city is functioning.
Yeah, and that was a lot of questions I had this morning. People said, what functions of city government, I'm paraphrasing several of them, but they're basically saying, who's not going to be working? Are they going to be doing trash? Are they going to be doing garbage? Who stays on? Everybody's on right now with the city, right?
Yeah, everything that can be shifted online or by phone, we're getting that done, and we've come a long way in 7 days to making sure that everything that can be done online and by phone is being done. So that's good. That means things like permits and business licenses and all of that can be transacted through the city website or by phone. And if you go to the city website, you can get all that information. The other services, what you'd call kind of the core essential services, no disruption there, and they are showing up every day and getting the job done.
Is there anything different when they're back at the office or headquarters that they're doing differently to try to prevent the spread?
Absolutely. We've the same guidelines that we're out there encouraging the citizens to use, we're employing those within the city as well. So social distancing is funny. What does that really mean? Well, keeping that distance. If you can work by phone or telework or work from home, we're encouraging our folks to do that. That's really a decision for the department heads. The group meetings, everybody's using Zoom or some teleconferencing app now to conduct business meetings of the city, and some things are getting pushed off. We certainly have canceled all the events, public events, mm-hmm. and looking at everything we can do to contain and stop the spread. That's the best thing all of us can do.
And just 1 minute left here, but I saw that also the discussion of the pulling back from the police jurisdiction, that has been tabled as well, right?
Yeah, we were going to have a meeting tomorrow, actually, with the sheriff and the county and council members, and we're just going to postpone that at this time. We've got more immediate crisis to deal with coronavirus, so I expect that'll come back up in time in the weeks ahead.
Hey, questions of the city, still 311, or is there another route right now? What do people do?
Yeah, absolutely. 311 is the easiest. That's the front line. If you've got a problem that is not an emergency, if you have an emergency, always call 911 for that. The 311 is a great resource for any service requests or questions or any kind of information from the city. That's a great place to start.
As always, I appreciate your time, George. Thanks for being on with us.
Yes, sir.
All right.
Have a news conference at 3:00 today, live streamed on the city's website. Look for details on that.
Okay, we'll be tuned in. Thanks. George Talbot, Director of Communications and External Affairs for the City of Mobile. And we're coming right back. And Todd Stacey going to take us to Montgomery next.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Monday. And coming up next hour, what about schools here? There's a conversation we had this morning with State Superintendent Mackey about when, you know, they're supposed to go back to school next month. A lot of people have their doubts about that. What happens if they don't? We'll get into that coming up next hour. Actually, maybe talk a little bit about it right now with my friend Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, checking in from Montgomery. Hey, Todd.
Hey, Sean. How's it going?
Good. And I want to talk about this. You and I talked during the news break. So you're in Montgomery, and you've been quarantining, except you've gotten out and you're taking walks, right, around the neighborhood or whatever?
Oh yeah, I don't think I've ever walked the neighborhood so much in my life, but it's kind of nice. There's been good weather, so why not?
Yeah. So, but you and I talked about it, and this is something I saw over the weekend, visiting with family members, visiting with people in my front yard. Is we all stand at a distance from each other, you know? And I mean, like even for me, it's even more than 6 feet. It was like 10 feet, and you're talking to somebody at distance. And I saw it with people walking. People come walking, and then they switch to the other side of the street from that group, so they don't walk right by them. Are you seeing that?
Oh, absolutely. It's really funny how, you know, society and our culture just sort of can shift. You know, this really hasn't been going on for more than a week or so, as far as in Alabama. But yeah, when you walking down the street and you pass a neighbor, and just kind of naturally you shift to the other side. And it's something that if you brought somebody here in a time machine from several months ago and then saw people doing all this, it would look very strange and kind of rude, really. But that's where we're at, and I think it's good. It's society has gotten the message, right? Hey, look, you never know who's carrying something. Just to protect yourself and to protect everybody around you, just keep it at a distance for a while. I think it's probably a good thing, but yeah, it's pretty strange.
Yeah, y'all don't have the big case. I mean, you've got cases in Montgomery, but you know, none of us have it like right up the road in Jefferson County. That is the epicenter for Alabama.
That's right. There's 167 cases statewide. That is positive, confirmed cases of COVID-19. 79 of those cases are in Jefferson County. And of course, that makes sense. It's the state's most populous county. It is a legit urban city where people are in close contact. So, and not to mention the travel that comes from, you know, in and out of state and even out of the country. So, 79 cases. We expect that to really increase as the testing increases. One number to note is that there, you know, as I said, 167 positive cases, but that comes from 1,832 tests that have been administered. So if you do the math, that comes out to about 9%, 9.12%. That means the number of people who are going in and getting tested that actually test positive, it's about 9%. And that's an interesting statistic because, all right, if you feel like maybe you should be tested, either you've been around some sick people or feel sick yourself, you're going in to try to do that proactively. Of those people, 9% are testing positive. I'm going to be interested as we move forward to watch that number go up and down, whether it, you know, more cases are being confirmed from the tests or fewer. I think the positive view would be that number would shrink dramatically once we're in the clear, but that may be a few weeks.
I want to talk one of your stories today, and we'll tell folks how to get your email newsletter to their inbox here in a second. But number two on your list, crisis highlights digital divide. And I had a conversation this morning with Dr. Eric Mackey, state superintendent of schools, and talking about what do we do with the kids, you know, if they, I mean, I'm not trying to project here, but there is a fair chance to say school, they don't go back to school anytime soon, let alone April, you know. So what do you do? How do you get these kids to matriculate to the next level? And he got to talking about digital learning, but it's not the same. He said it'd be one story in Birmingham or Mobile or Montgomery, but a different story in rural parts of Alabama.
It's exactly right, and it's a real pickle, because as much as we, you know, want students to be in school, to be learning, you're talking about the very place where so many people would be at risk. I mean, how do you social distance in an elementary school, right? I think there's a lot of people that expect school just to be pretty much done for the rest of the year. And that comes with a lot of questions. Like you said, are these students supposed to go to the next level? We've already been reviewing our policies about that as far as being on reading level and how important it is to be on reading level. But when this first happened, when school was canceled more than a week ago, people started talking about, okay, well, this is okay. We can do the online learning. So, you know, a lot of schools around the state have some type of online capabilities. And so, you know, that would be great. Can we connect students online to teachers and keep the instruction going? But the thing is, now for those of us in areas where there's plenty of internet and all that, it's easy to forget that lots of part of the state does not have a broadband internet. I mean, in rural Alabama, there's just not a way to connect. And so this is an issue that the legislature has debated. They've taken action to try to speed up the infrastructure to get it to rural places. But that has really just begun. And this crisis is really laying bare the fact that there's a big gap between, you know, suburban and urban Alabama and rural parts of the state when it comes to connecting to the internet.
Well, okay, this is showing it, but if the state's going to be putting any dollars into fixing this, it's going to have to be in the future, because I mean, I'm thinking about the what the 6% of sales tax the state is getting, the lodging tax. That, you know, you talk about budgets turned upside down.
Oh yeah, and look, what the deal is? I mean, if a broadband company, if you know, AT&T or Comcast or one of these companies that offers broadband, if they want to go into an area, they have to have enough customers to meet that demand, right? If you're going to build infrastructure and spend all that capital on it, you're not going to do it if it's going to a town of, you know, 30 people, you know,
right,
30 potential customers. That doesn't justify the expense. That's just business. So what the state has tried to do with some federal help as well is offer grants to say, okay, we're going to make it worth your while to build these infrastructure, you know, lines and everything. The interesting thing is it's been a real fight in the legislature, and a lot of these cable companies have opposed it because they see it as, you know, allowing their competition an entrance into the marketplace in rural places. And so it was actually a pretty big fight the last 2 years in the legislature. But now with what's going on, I think it's going to be hard for them to say no.
Yeah, but it's, I am worried in general on any kind of money coming out of the state. I mean, what, at least I guess in this one scenario, thank goodness they hadn't gotten the budget done. But of course, I always lament that they leave that to last. But in this case, I guess it pays off. Are they working on it now? Will they have to gavel back in officially to work on the budget? What's happening with that?
Well, it's all still up in the air. We're trying to get a clearer picture. It looks so. The House was scheduled to reconvene this coming Thursday, and that's not going to happen. No. They will not have a quorum. And because of the rules adopted during the snowstorms several years ago, that's okay. They won't burn any legislative days. So what we're hearing right now is that the House and Senate will probably come back in some form or fashion next week, really just to evaluate the situation, possibly adjourn indefinitely, right? I mean, just get, you know, come gavel in, say, okay, we're going to basically adjourn the session until indefinitely. Because there's just, we don't know when this is going to, you know, blow over. And so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to continue kicking the can and setting these meeting dates until we know, you know, we're in the clear. Problem is, the 105 days that the legislature has to meet ends on May 18th. So that's the day you want to look toward into that first 2 weeks of May to see if anything is going to get done this session. We'll take the budgets, for example. There are some lawmakers that really want to just do something, get the budgets done, even if it's a bare bones kind of thing, because that's their constitutional responsibility. But there's others who make a good point that, look, because of the effect this is having on our economy, we don't know what the budgets are actually going to look like. We won't know for a while just how bad the sales tax and the lodging taxes and all the different revenues that fund the state. We don't know that yet, so we would be foolish to go ahead and set that budget without knowing. So I think it's pretty likely that we're going to have some special sessions, at least one special session in the fall to take care of some of those things, you know, budgets. Schools need to know what they are budgeted for next year, you know, before the start of the next school year. So I think maybe into August, maybe into September, they're gonna
wow,
have a special session and finalize the budgets.
All right, Todd, can you hang out a second? Come right back for the news break. More
sure.
With Todd Stacy, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. We'll let you know how to get this email we're talking about in your inbox. Also, talk more Montgomery and a little bit of Washington when we return.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Heads up to front page of FMTalk1065.com. When you're there, by the way, we hadn't talked about this since this morning. The 1-800-GOT-JUNK online opinion poll question we put up at the end of last week. On a scale of 1 to 5, how quarantined are you right now? Number one is like no difference in your regular life. Five, you're staying at home under complete self-quarantine. We'll talk about those stats coming up in a little bit, but you can vote online, front page of FMTalk1065.com. While you're there, too, the tab for COVID-19 local news, the interviews I do, whether they're with health professionals or elected officials or anybody in between, that all ends up one place. Those podcasts, you can also get them at iTunes, Stitcher, and all the places you get our podcast, or go into the podcast tab, but we've curated them there. I call that just gathering them up and putting them there. But you can check that out, COVID-19 local news on the front page of our website. And while we're talking about websites, I'm talking about my buddy Todd Stacey's website, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. If somebody is new to this, what's that website all about?
Well, it's just what it means. It's the daily news of Alabama. We cover politics primarily from here in Montgomery, where I live, but also the news coming out of Washington, D.C. as it pertains to the state. And look, right now is the time when you want to be tuned into all this, because it's become, you know, coronavirus all the time. As much as that can be annoying, there's a lot of updates, there's a lot of information flowing, and so we try to stay on top of it. But the best way to actually get the news each day, get the daily news, is to sign up for the newsletter. It's really easy and it's free. Just go to aldailynews.com, click subscribe at the top, enter your name and your email, and you'll be on the list. Again, it's free. It's a daily rundown of all the news you need to know, plus headlines from around the state, and of course the front pages, which are really popular.
Let me give you all an example why I think Todd's service is so important here. Because there's a national discussion of the SBA loans and what's happened at a federal level, but you specifically break down what that means in Alabama, what the governor had to say about that.
That's right. And look, the governor was wise to basically, at the earliest she could, go ahead and apply to the Small Business Administration for those disaster loans for small businesses in Alabama. Now, look, these aren't a cure-all. I own a small business, right? I mean, you would be incurring debt, and it's low interest debt, in some cases no interest debt, but you are incurring debt. But it's something, and it could be the difference between a business, you know, failing because of this stuff, or actually having the capital to continue on. But when you're talking about bailouts and all this kind of stuff that's going to be happening over the next several weeks, this is one thing. That really isn't a bailout at all. It's a loan to get through, and so you can read online about how you can qualify for that. It's fourth or fifth story down.
Yeah, and I talked about this morning with Jeff Sessions. Can you imagine, like, you and I and so many small business folks in the state, the frustration when you hear, okay, it's an airline bailout. Will it be a Boeing bailout? Pick your big business. Will it be a bailout? And we're having to scrap for the percentage of interest rate on a loan. I mean, and even though small business employs more than any other sector in the country, you know, because we're balkanized, we don't have one voice. We got to fight for every scrap.
It really is, and that's why I kind of say it's great. It's nice that they can make this announcement, and they were wise to get it in early. But let's not pretend that it's a bailout. Let's not pretend this is free money. It's a loan, and if you're already in economic distress, sometimes a loan, incurring debt, can be a really bad idea. So, I agree. I'm a small business owner. It would not be an easy thing to take on and incur a lot of that debt. But it can work for some people. I also do think that you're going to see some legislation, from Congress eventually, that will address small businesses. Because of the point you just made, it's so much a part of the economy. You're going to have to do something. As far as like the airlines and the big corporations, I mean, I understand that. We saw back in 2008, you know, how the economy really stood on the brink of unraveling as some of these huge companies fell. So yes, I get it. It's important. But you're right. The little guy sometimes gets squeezed.
Yeah, sometimes. All the time. All the time gets squeezed, but that's what they're, and I want to talk about that a little bit with your experience in Washington as well. As a sausage is getting made up there, it's both sides are pointing fingers that hey, they're throwing this rider in or that rider in, this bill or that bill, to get money to the American people. But when I did hear the Democrats were working on getting solar and wind tax credits, I mean, I'm all for that discussion, just not in this bill. This is not the time.
Absolutely right. I, you know, when I when I heard that they blocked the bill Sunday night, this is last night, I guess I wasn't surprised because, you know, they're going to try to get whatever they can into the bill. But when I heard about what they're actually trying to get in there, you're talking about collective bargaining power for unions, getting fuel emission standards, wind and solar, all this stuff has absolutely nothing to do with the crisis at hand. It's like the old saying, you know, never let a good crisis go to waste. And while that may seem smart politically for how they want to, you know, get their priorities done, the Democrats, I mean, I think it would play really badly. It will, and it is playing really badly amongst the American public that wants to see action. The Republican bill, the McConnell bill, was basic, but it kind of needs to be, right? You put the Band-Aid on. You have to stop the bleeding. If there are other things needed later, they can always go back and add them. But it makes me sick to see Congress playing politics with this. It's apparent to me. And, Sean, you know I'm not a partisan hack when it comes to news.
You're not.
I always keep it right down. If you read the daily news, you know I keep it very fair. But this is pretty one-sided to me. It was ridiculous to see this bill blocked. I think there's going to be some political price to pay, too, when it's very clear that one side wanted a very basic deal, very basic package, and the other side wanted to insert their ideological items into the package. It's pretty obvious for everybody to see.
I wrote the ad in my head today when I heard that. I picture be a family in an apartment with a landlord knocking on the door calling for the rent. At the same time, you split screen it with Pelosi et al. Adding in all these other things into the bill. And the bill's not being passed. It's not being passed. And they're holding it up. And the knocks continue on the door as people are trying to come up with the money for rent. That's just a little something I think they could roll out. But
yeah, maybe they can't. It shouldn't be political. I
agree.
I wish the folks in Washington would get it. Both sides. That every time you turn something like this political, people are disgusted. Now, look, I know politics these days, it's kind of a pastime. It's like a blood sport, and everybody sort of, you know, that's been heightened over the last couple of years. But this, it comes a point where you got to stop it. And I think this is the latest example that's going to really disgust a lot of people. They better get their act together. And if I was Mitch McConnell, if I was the Senate Republicans, I would call it out for what it is. I wouldn't let them get away with it. They're actually voting right now on cloture on the bill again, right? They're going to give the Democrats another chance to come on board. I don't think they are. And so here we go back to the negotiating table. But here's the basic, you asked about my experience in Washington. Here's the thing. Democrats have one thing going for them as far as power goes right now, and that is the House of Representatives. They have the majority in the House. So they're going to use that one thing they have, that one lever of power they have, to get what they can. And so that's what they're doing. Pelosi's writing her own bill, and so they're going to try to do it that way. The problem, that's normal legislating. Under normal circumstances, no problem with that at all. But this is an extraordinary time. This is a crisis, an emergency. We don't have time to play politics and to get everything you want. So hopefully they'll get their act together.
Yeah, we can hope. We'll see. The pressure has got it. Like you said, the pressure has got to be mounting on Democrats, even within their own ranks, to say you got to get this moving. They got to get this moving. People lost their jobs. People need money. You got to get this moving.
Yeah, this is not a Christmas tree to hang your ornaments on, and, you know, to get it passed through the Congress. This is an emergency. You know, just the basics.
Well said. Well said. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Once again, how they get signed up for the email.
It's really easy. aldailynews.com, that's the homepage. Go click subscribe right there at the top. You'll want to enter your name and your email. It's free, no cost at all. But you'll have the daily news in your inbox every day from me.
All right, man. Stay away from your neighbors on your walks, okay?
And enjoy your isolation, Sean.
As always, I do. That part of my life's not been a big change. All right, coming back, hour number two.